Simon Chinlamed Alatif Chavhei. We started this the topic of what happens if a fire cholera does spread, and these goyim keen and helpful goyim want to extinguish it. We learned that generally speaking, a person is not allowed to benefit from a halacha performed by a goy. However, over here we're learning the following halacha. Any Yehudi shebole chabois, if a goy comes to extinguish the fire, hein tzorich limchos piyod, you do not need to stop him. You do not need to stop him. Havol kotna shebole lichbois, but if a minor, a child comes, I'm sorry. It's very rare that I actually come to share with a phone. It's very rare. And just point today, I'm sorry about that. But if a child comes to, I have a feeling that he's gonna, well, I'm just too on silent. Sorry. But if a child comes to extinguish, you must stop him. The Mishnah Berurah over here tells us the following, that if a goy comes, Mishnah Berurah says, if gone samach zayin, yocholoyma, kimen she'eino oymeloy kabeis, since you're not instructing him, but he's doing it on his own accord, you may just leave him, as we say, live and let live, kind of thing. If he wants to extinguish it on his own accord, you may just leave him to it. That's fine. What happens if a person would say the following? What happens if a person now is really concerned? Again, there's no pikuach nefesh involved, but a fire is spreading now, and you see all your valuable items that literally going in flames. Now, you don't want to tell him, you're not allowed to physically instruct him, do you mind to please extinguish? But he's coming and he's just looking at it and he says, oh wow, that's quite a big fire, you know, isn't it? And he's too English and too polite to actually just get, you know, over it. Would you be able to tell him the following? If you would extinguish this fire, you wouldn't lose out. You're not going to lose out. And he says, do you mean financially? And he says, well, it's a Sabbath today, but... it might be worth it for you. Would you be able to do that? You're not instructing him. All you're telling him is, you wouldn't lose by extinguishing this fire. Yes or no? Works or doesn't work?
Doesn't work.
Does not work. Does work. Shulchan Aruch Sif Chavav. Yocholoyma bifnei eine Yehudi. You can tell a goy. Kol hamechabei, whoever extinguishes, eino imafsid, he shall not lose out from this. You're not instructing him. You're telling him you're not going to lose out from it. You're not going to lose out. He gets the message. Afi eino mezuman, yeah, and not only that. Afi eino mezuman kan, yochol ikoisoi shiyovoi. Even if he's not... if he's not really meant to be, but if you're making him like, you're like making a, he's not really, you're like, he's not really meant to be, but you're like inviting him. You're like, you're telling him, you come, you mind to come here? Look at this. Can you see this fire over here? Yeah, if you're seeing to it, you won't lose out. This is all my properties. And, you know, if you're going to see to it, after the Sabbath, we can talk about it. You can do that. So not only you can tell him that, but you can actually physically signal to him as well. So, Avi enim ezumen kan yochol ikroys eshov, you can call him. Even if it's evident that he's actually going to see to it. So since you're not instructing him, the problem is to instruct and to physically tell him. If he gets the message in other ways, by hints or by indirect thoughts, that is permitted, that's okay. Now, would this work also if you've got a shop? Say you own a shop. Leave out Marisa Ayn questions and all that. You've got a shop in a Goyisha area. Would you be able to tell him to give instructions to Goyisha worker in an indirect way? So you've got Goyisha workers which work on you on the whole week. Could you tell him, listen, if you're going to sell those items in my shop on Shabbos, then it's worth it for you. It's worth it for you.
Does he own the actual freehold of the shop as well as the business? Because he doesn't own the freehold.
Okay.
So he's causing a loss to the...
You're saying that it makes a difference as to where they actually...
I'm just saying, could could it make a difference to the owner who may not be Jewish or maybe Jews or
that? Yeah. So
he could save the business, which is his.
Do you know what? Let's say you get a percentage. You get a percentage. It's his, you get a percentage. He gets a percentage. He gets a percentage for every transaction that he makes. That kind of example. Or something. Do you think you can do that? If you own a shop or your partner, and you're telling the guy, you know, if you're going to do it, it's worth it for you. So the answer is no, you can't. And the reason for that is as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says that in the second line, v'chen kol kiyotze bazen, anything similar to that, behezek habo pisoim. This rule that we just said now, you can give an indirect instruction, that's only if it's a hezek habo pisoim, if it's a sudden occurrence. If it's something which happened pisoim, suddenly, without preparation, then you can give these indirect instructions. But kugoin such as im nisraya chovish al yain, you've got this big barrel of wine or this big barrel of expensive wine which is leaking. You can call the goy. You can tell the goy, oh wow, did you see this barrel of wine over here? It's leaking. And he says, oh, let me better fix it. And he say, you can say, you know, if you insist, kind of thing. But not you can't instruct him, look at this, there's a hole, it's leaking, please fix it. Because that means you're instructing the guy, he's your shliach, he's acting on your behalf, that is also. But if it is a sudden occurrence, and you're giving an indirect instruction, that's fine. So basically, we're learning these 2 points over here. One is that it's an indirect instruction, and the other point is that it's a hezek habor pisoim, it's a sudden occurrence. If I knew before Shabbos that this is going to happen, then I may not do that. It's only because there was a mishap taking place. Hezek habor pisoim. We move on. Now, Rabbi Sai, there is over here something fascinating. This Zemo is perhaps one of the very few places in Shulchan Aruch. I'm not a baki in Shulchan Aruch by any standards, but there is over here in this Shulchan Aruch, in this Ramah that we're going to learn now, something very rare. And whilst normally the halacha is very technical, the halacha is always quite, you know, by definition, technical. Is it muta? Is it also? Is it forbidden? Is it restricted? When? What? How? You know, everything is very technical. And then one of the very rare places that we see a bit of musa, that we see Musa, it comes from a technical point really, but we see Musa, very, very deep Musa, very deep Musa, is Nisama. It's one of the very, very, very rare places. That's a very, very mess, very rare, very rare Ramovia here. But let's start, this is the second part only that I'm referring to. For Chol Adinim Aniskorim B'dinei Adlokah, the Ramo starts and he says as follows. Any aloha that we discuss now, with regards to the dik, with regards to the fire, who are in our editions, page 356, and in the Ramah, which is in the Ramah of Sif Chavov. Kol ha-dinim ha-nizkorim b'dini ha-adloka. Any dinim which is discussed in this hadlok, in this simon over here, the old simon, we discussed, hanamili b'yimeim. This is only in those days. Everything discussed. Yes, you may save from the fire. No, you may not save from the fire. That's only in those days. But nowadays, we live nowadays in contemporary times, says the Ramah, between Goyim. And if there is a fire, it will inevitably lead to a Sakonas Nefoshes. With Goyish neighbors, if you're not seeing to the fire, it's going to spread. And what will happen? It's going to spread into the Goyish places. And what are they going to do? The fire spreads. What are they going to do? It's spread into the Goyish areas of the... They're going to say that it was the Yidin who caused it all. And what's going to, Cholila, what's going to end up being is going to be, that they're going to, you know, it's going to be very bad news. They're going to be very, very, very upset. They're going to be, it's the kind of the force for the Yidin. Because they caused all this fire. So, therefore, never mind the fact that the Yidin got damaged themselves. That's not to be taken into account. They'll say that all the going, there may be a second of the force for the Yidin. That they caused this fire to spread. So therefore, it's the Konos Nefoshes. Kos v'arishonim v'achoinim, rishonim, and achoinim write, shemuta, it is permitted, lechabo isleike b'shabbos, it is always permitted to extinguish a fire on Shabbos. Mishum diyesh b'zakonos nefoshes, always the Konos Nefoshes involved. V'azor izarezem mishubach, and whoever is quick and efficient and fast in extinguishing the fire, this is praiseworthy. Just go for it and extinguish it. Take the hose, spritz the water, and get on with it. ומכל מוקים הכל לפי עניין nevertheless, bear in mind, דימו יבטוחים ודאי, that if you know for sure there is, if you know, you should still keep in mind, if you're 100% convinced, שלא יהיה להם סכונה, that if you're convinced there's no סכונה, by any stand, there's no סכונה over here, also the chabos, then you should still remember that it's also to extinguish the fire. אבל בחשש, סכונה סופק, but if there is the slightest doubt that there may be somebody that is second as the forces here, mutter the chabois, you're allowed to extinguish it, afil atlik, beveisish in yudi, vichenu again, even if there's a fire in a goyisha house, if you are scared, if you are concerned that this may lead directly or indirectly to second as the forces, you're allowed to extinguish it with your own hands, even if it's in the goyisha house. Chabois said, there's 2 points over here. We're learning 2 points. One is that there's a fire directly endangering lives. And that's what Mishnah Berurah says over here, in Sifkot Nayin Gimel, that look at Mishnah Berurah Sifkot Nayin Gimel, Mize Yotzo Heta Lechabos Adleke B'chol Mokum. From here comes the reasoning, the rationale. The Olah always allowed to extinguish any fire. Kivim Tefsha Im Lo Yichabena. If you're not going to extinguish it, Halechsem Miyois Shom Beir Zorken Ocholei Shein Yochel Ivroach. There is every city in the world who has elderly people, and there's also Cholim who are unable to, or not mobile, they cannot run away from the fire. Every city, every yishuv, every settlement, every area has got old people, and people that are not particularly fast and walking. So therefore, every fire is a sakonas nefoshes, directly. This is point number one. And therefore, there's a categorical heter to extinguish any fire. But there's another point as well, which the Amor adds. And that is that even if you know, if you know this is a ghost city and there's nobody in whole Eden have gone away for Yom Tov, they've all gone to the Rebbe to Bnei Brak, and there's nobody left behind. Nevertheless, if you want to extinguish, they went away for Shabbaton. I don't know, you know that. Nevertheless, you're still allowed to extinguish it for another reason. Because if the fire spreads and it's going to go into the Goyish area, to Goyim, the Goyim may be so angry that this may lead to Sekonos Nefoshes for another reason, for indirect reason. They're going to be, they might lead to Sekonos Nefoshes because of the anger of the Goyim. So that's an additional reason as well. Both reasons are true, and he says it's certainly Sekonos Nefoshes, and therefore any fire that exists, you'd like to extinguish it. You'd like to extinguish it. Okay, this is the idea. You want to say something? I've covered. Okay. Now, the Ramah adds now a point. What we said now is to extinguish the fire. He says, remember that this is always a Meloch Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. An important reminder, extinguishing fire is by definition Meloch Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Because, as we've discussed previously, a Meloch is only a Meloch Tzrich L'Gufa is if you need the physical outcome. So for instance, in this case of here, if I'm burning something, and then after some, there's a fire, there's something burning, and I'm extinguish it purely because I want the, what's called? Ash. The ash. I want the ash. Why do I want the ash? Because it's, what would your positive reason for needing ash? Pardon? Ash, what do you need ash for? That's right. I need ash for covering, that's right. I need ash for very positive. So if I'm now extinguishing for the ash, that is considered melacha hatzricha legufa, and that's going to be a melacha deraisa, and that's according to all opinions, that's a melacha deraisa. Extinguishing, however, because you don't want the fire, that is considered a melacha she'ein tzricha legufa. Why am I extinguishing? Not because I want the ash, but I want the non-fire. I don't want the fire. And that makes it melacha she'ein tzricha legufo. I do not need the melacha for its own natural reason, and that makes it probably the rabbanon, or at least not a severe deraisa. So therefore, when we talk about extinguishing, we need to keep in mind always that is an element of the rabbanon in it as well. And besides that, of course, it's sakon, that's the main reason as well. But you will not be able to do a rabbanon just to save yourself for money. But also the chalat shabbos kedei la'atzim omen. Full stop. Now, Rabbosai, now watch out for these critical, famous, Musnadic words of the Ramah. You want to know how much is an Aveira worth? If I ask you, how much is Lashon Hara worth? Has it got value? Financial value? If I ask you, and what's the financial value of an Aveira? How much is it worth to do Chilul Shabbos? how much money will you, how much, is there a value to it? How much will you pay not to do an aveira? What's the financial loss of an aveira? Let's put it that way. What is the financial value of an aveira? Is there financial meaning to it? Or perhaps, do you understand my question? I want to know, is there any way to calculate Chat HaShemena? You're saying that the Chat HaShemena, when I do an aveira, Rabbi Feingold says, when a person does, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, he did an aveira b'shoigik, you had to bring a chatos, a carbon chatos. And a carbon chatos, what would be worth something? When the Beis HaMikdash stood, you had to bring a carbon. And however much the value of a carbon is, that's how much an aveira is worth. Okay, the Shulchan, you can't, why? So Rabbi Feingold's words, you have to medayik his words. He said chatos shmeino. He said a fat, fat. So that means that you have to go lechumra. You have to assume that it's a chatos shmeino. Oh, you're saying that's if you have anything, you have a bit of an idea how much. Yeah. Okay, Rabbi said we have over here a fascinating. I'll tell you why this may be nogea. I'll tell you. Let's say a person did an aveira. He spoke lashon hara. He switched on the light by mistake. He by mistake had a tissue in his pocket. And he now wants to give stocker of the equivalent of how much the aveira was. To give £5, to give £10, to give £500. How much is an aveira worth? You're saying you cannot calculate because it's spiritual. Very interesting. I want to get to your point. There's no financial value. You reminded me of a story. Can I just, before we move on to the Ramo, he's going to prove us wrong, but I want to tell you a moiding amazing of Chavetz Chaim. Chavetz Chaim, it's a fascinating story. It's one of those stories that is just like an eye-opener. Chavetz Chaim, I just checked this story again recently, and it's from a very reliable Makoy, from Reb Shmuel Ganeman, who heard it from the Chavetz Chaim himself. Somebody wrote this down from Reb Shmuel Ganeman, so it's a very, very reliable Makoy. He said that when there was I may have mentioned it once or here a while ago. The mindset goes that there was in between the wars, some areas were very, it was mamash a poverty, and there was mamash close to a famine. It was very, very, some areas of Poland and Russia was very, very poor between the wars. And they started, they went to Chofetz Chaim and they said, why not, you know, if we all, would Chofetz Chaim be prepared to give away the mitzvah of tefillin? The mitzvah of the Chofetz Chaim, you know, if we all give away the mitzvah of tefillin, if we give the schar with the mitzvah of tefillin to the Ribono Shel Olam, we give the reward, the mitzvah of tefillin, perhaps in that schus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give us a bit of bracha, and it's going to be a bit of, and Yidden will have a bit more food. If some of us get together, we say there's a reward of the mitzvah of tefillin. Tefillin is a great mitzvah. If we give that reward, we are mevat on the reward in Olam Haba, and instead of that, we make it, as it were, we deal with the Ribono Shel Olam, and that's the idea they went to. We're all going to mevat on the tzchar of tefillin, and instead of that, Yidden are going to get food. We're going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't give us a reward for the mitzvah, but instead give food to other Yidden, because they are still hungry. They approached the Chofetz Chaim with this idea. And the Chofetz Chaim replied, and he said, no, it doesn't work. You can't make a deal like the Ribono Shel Olam. But eventually what he said is that you cannot, he said, it's as if you're going to the Nusach that he said that, yeah, Kol Chafetzecha Leyeshvubo, he said, he brought a Lashon in Tehillim, and he said that the value of Tefillin, even one person, is so much greater than all the Eden, it's so much greater. You're talking in a different value altogether. So it's one person doing Tefillin, one day, it's so much greater that even if you'd feed the whole world with that schar, the mitzvah is so much greater. You can't pay one mitzvah is so great. But let's see, because the Ramovi is telling us something which is, I think is a great, it's a very interesting Ramov. The Ramov says, what happens if a person did the Chilul Shabbos? So he's talking about over here, if a person was trying to save himself from financial loss, there was no pikuach nefesh, and there was no sekhanas nefoshes. He couldn't resist that the temptation was a fire, and he saw he had a lot of valuable items in the house, and he couldn't hold himself back. He took the hose and he spritzed the water and extinguished the fire. There was no sakon. He was obviously doing a chet. He was doing chilul Shabbos. And afterwards he felt very bad about this. So the Ramah says, what is he meant to do? What is he meant to do? What is he meant to do? Says the Ramah, if a person did a chilul Shabbos, and he was doing it the Rabbanon, all he was doing was he was extinguishing the fire, which we said is Menachshin Tzichilu Gufa. Tzorech is Anos, you need to fast. Do you know how much you need to fast for this Rabbanon? Give a guess. Give a guess how much you need to fast for being over on one Drabonon. Tzorech leis anos arboim yoim. You need to fast 40 days. Rabbi say 40 days for Drabonon. 40 fast on a Drabonon. One Drabonon. He extinguished the fire Drabonon. 40 days. 40 days, sheni v'chameshi. Mondays and Thursdays. Fasting. V'lo yishte yayin. You may not drink wine on the following evening. Don't have meat and don't have wine. This is very much Rabbi Feingold's point. Instead of a mokom chatos, you need to give yutches pshitin itzdoke, 18 pshitin itzdoke. That is the equivalent, according to contemporary cheshbon, it's the equivalent of 17 grams of silver. How much is 17 grams of silver worth? Anybody in the jewelry trade? Any idea? 17 grams of silver? I don't think it's so much. How much is it? Any idea? 17 grams of pure silver? Sounds too much. You know, imagine a becha, which is pure silver. It's more than 70. It doesn't cost £300. I don't know. Do you have any idea? How much is a gram of silver? 17 grams? The only thing I can picture. How much is a becha? A kois? How much is it? How much does a becha cost? Yeah, about 80 to 100. How much gram is it?
It's been refined.
Yeah. Okay, just to give us a bit of an idea. How much is 1 gram? I'm not 17 gram. So, Rabbi said, I need to fast 40 days plus 17 gram.
17 grams of silver.
Yeah, pure silver. Yes, it does mean 40 days proper fasting. Yes, because on the Azim Mishnebura sentence of Kotna Ein Tess, Lo Yoichal Bosso Hainu Belayla Sh'achar Atayinis. As well as fasting for 40 days, this person also needs to not have meat when he breaks the fast by night. He should not have meat and wine.
The silver spot's worth 46 cents a kilo, a gram.
Okay.
So that's,
and that's for, okay, so that's not a fortune, okay. But I think what it's giving us a bit of an idea is the 40 days for, and if a person wants to, if he can't fast for 40 days, then, if a person wants to redeem it, he can redeem it for tzedakah as well. I am betul yerid there. Rabbi say 40 days of fast, plus tzedakah for a person who did the derabbanon. Imagine somebody who, imagine you have a tissue in your pocket and you walk around like this on Shabbos. That's at least a derabbanon. Might be more than that, but it's that's 40, you really should fast 40 days after. What happens if you make a mistake when you make the challenge? I don't know, you're by mistake putting it back on the hot plate and you're forgetting that you need to, I don't know, you're doing one of the things, you're getting one of the things wrong. Says the Mishnah Bosef Kotn Ein Ches, if I can follow your words. That's also an interesting point. Can you push it off to if it is happened in the summer, can you push it off to the winter fast? So you say you want, you know, it's easy to fast till, when is Nacht nowadays? 5. So you prefer to fast till 5, and the Tana starts at what time?
6:30.
Yeah, 6:30. It's easy to fast from 6:35 rather than in the summer, where it's like nearly double as long. So you want, can you push it off? If this incident took place in the summer, can you decide, okay, I'm going to do the 40 fast, but I'm going to do it more in a different type of year when it's shorter? Can you do that, yes or no? Is that considered cheating? So very interestingly, Mishnah Berurah says, yes, you can. You can make a tainis yochid and time it for the winter months. Now he says, "V'kol ze bein shava al isa deraisa al isa derabonon." This whether it was deraisa or derabonon, the same. Who makes shava b'shoyg? This is b'shoygek. Yeah, so he said that this is bein b'shoygek, bein b'meizit. The same shit will apply. Habayis, I must add before being misquoted, I must add that the poskim say this was. We learned this extensively when we learned the relevant halachas in Hilchos Tainis in Chelek Vav. The Mishleburim said now nowadays we don't fast. The minhag is not to fast nowadays. Even a person does do an avera, the minhag is not to fast. We will generally either give tzedakah, or we will perhaps do what the Mishnah Berurah recommends, the Tainis Dibur, or learn with greater asmada, to learn be great as you do extra session of learning, you add a bit of your learning, or you will have extra tzedakah, or what the Mishnah Berurah also quotes the Tainis Arayvet, that you eat something that you really fancy eating, you refrain from eating. So normally you have very fancy vanilla ice cream dessert with chocolate spread and sprinkles. That's your normal dessert. So if you refrain yourself from eating that, and you won't be hungry because of it, so that's considered, it's called the Tainis Arayvet, and that is just as great as fasting, because we will know what it's like to stop yourself from that extra, that thing that you really, if you stop, that's just as great as fasting a full Tainis, according to, Mishnah Berurah says that nowadays we don't fast, and it's not good practice to fast, unless you really have a particular drive towards it. But rather one should add extra learning or do or tainis deba and that. But I think that nevertheless, what we have an insight, a very rare insight in the choyma, in the severity of a chet. Imagine that for an issa d'rabbanon, Shulchan Aruch says you've got to fast 40 times, 40 days. It's quite incredible, and we think that Yom Kippur. That should sort out the whole year, really. And normally, you've got to do 40 days. There is out there, I mean, I've done it nowadays, but certainly in previous generations, it was very common. I mean, I'm very humbled to think about my grandmother's mother used to fast every Thursday. It was just such a long time ago, if you think about it. She used to fast every Thursday. Can you believe it? And Rabbi Dunah, I saw recently in his sefer, used to fast also very, very frequently, like every few couple of weeks used to fast as well. So this is not such a long time ago. Nowadays it's not done. And I think this Ramovi is giving us a bit of an insight of the severity of what Chet is all about. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.